Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, our interview with one, the only Larry Nance Jr., Cavs power forward, talked about soccer, talked about the suspension of the season, talked about his foundation, talked about a lot of stuff. It was a really fun interview. So without further ado, here's Evan and I talking to Larry Nance.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
We have the pleasure today of having Cavs forward Larry Nance Jr. on with us. Larry, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. So first off, how are you and your family and everyone just kind of approaching and managing the season being suspended and just kind of the situation that we're in right now as a broader society?
Just kind of managing really how everybody else is, doing our public service by staying inside and trying not to drive my wife crazy.
So what is your like day kind of like now, with being at home, with self-isolating, with just kind of all the protocols in place? What is just like a normal sort of day look like for you right now?
Really, it's just super boring. I mean, it's really gonna bore you guys to death. Like, just wait. I mean, really, it's like it's summertime right now. Like, I'm trying to stay inside, so not going to any gym. Shouldn't be going to any gym. Kind of wake up whenever. I think I see my mom and dad and little brother who's home from college. I see them probably every day. You know, if one of us has it, all of us have it, because the whole Nance clan, that's just, you know, where we've been hanging out with each other the whole time. So, it's just really just trying to find ways, you know, to not drive each other crazy. Like, it's just crazy that we're sitting here in March and there's nothing better to do than sit on the video games and watch TV. And that's what we're supposed to be doing.
What video games have you been playing, Larry, for those at home who are probably interested after you said that?
So for me, I do a lot of FIFA. I play some Call of Duty and a lot of Apex Legends.
Do you jump in with Dylan at all whenever he's streaming? Because he's become quite the Twitch guy in the last few weeks.
Yeah, no, I'm not a huge stream guy. You know, when I go on to play video games with my buddies, it's I don't really care to censor what we're talking about. Dang. So, you know, the streaming world isn't necessarily my cup of tea.
Nah, I get that for sure.
Has Channing like responded to any of the barbs you've thrown at him about his video game play of late? Like, has that kind of quote unquote, not rivalry per se, but that kind of fun little kind of beef that you've seen and tweeted him and stuff. Has he come out and challenged you at all, or has he been kind of ducking you a little bit?
No, 100%. I mean, Channing's doing the same thing as the rest of us are. So he's just looking to pass the time as well. So yeah, we've been playing a few games together, a little bit of Apex, a little bit of Overwatch, and the friendly banter between me and Channing that'll go on whether we're stuck at home or in full playoff mode. That's just how we are.
So I guess just to like ask you about this, Larry, since obviously a lot of people know like you have Crohn's disease, and so you obviously have to take a lot of extra precautions with everything going on as well. Can you kind of walk us through like what you have been doing just to like, you know, keep yourself extra safe on top of, you know, just normally being safe like everyone else is?
So, like you said, I have Crohn's, and, you know, that means you know, not just the Crohn's itself, you know, makes me more susceptible to it, but the medications I'm on were originally thought of as, you hear this disease, this virus is kind of attacking the elderly and the immunosuppressed, and that I'm the immunosuppressed. Mm-hmm. And so, I was, pretty terrified when, Rudy got diagnosed with it, and then guys around the league were coming down with it that, we had kind of been in contact with. And, that was pretty scary, because I know, of all the people, I'm in the area of that, of the group that's going to hit pretty hard. And so, mm-hmm. It's good to know that came and went, and I don't have it. We feel great. We're healthy and everything. But, since they shut down the league, I haven't left the house. I mean, my family comes over, we take rides in the car, but don't get out. I mean, I haven't left the house just because I really can't get this thing.
No, absolutely. Like, I read the piece on The Athletic that you helped work with, and like, obviously you're trying to do everything you can to keep it as clean as possible. So like, do you have hand sanitizer everywhere? And obviously, like, I'm sure antibacterial soap, and like, does your family have to like disinfect and everything when they come inside just to be safe?
Yeah. So, I mean, my family's doing the same thing. Like, they haven't been out of the house either. You know, we stocked up right when it first happened, and we've been pretty good, in terms of, preserving our reserves to make sure we don't have to go anywhere. But, no, that's not like they come in the house and have to wipe down or anything like that. It's just, gotcha. If they have it, I'm going to get it. If I have it, they're going to get it, just because, I know they haven't gone anywhere. They know I haven't gone anywhere. So, but yeah, I mean, there's hand sanitizer just about everywhere. There's soap. I wash my hands. My hands are super dry from just washing and washing and washing. And, other than that, I'm just, I interact with, my family, my wife, and my dogs. And if any of us have it, then that's just something I have to live with.
So, Larry, when this happened, and this all is kind of evolving very rapidly, what is the process like for you guys as a team? Considering you played the Jazz not that long before all of this happened, what is just that period like in terms of the team telling you guys what's going on, what the protocol is going to be? What does just that little snippet in time look like for you?
So it all happens so quickly. So I think, if you remember, there was the Jazz game was about to go on, or the Jazz were about to play a Thunder, and then the reports came out of them stalling the game, and then Chris Paul coming over to the bench and saying, "Hey, what happened to Rudy?" Like, we're literally following this just like the rest of the world on Woj's Twitter. And so we're scheduled to, like, I was literally in my closet packing to go on this, week long road trip on FaceTime with Kevin and Tristan, trying to figure out like what is going on right now. And, we are all just kind of sitting there like, okay, there's no way we're going, there's no way. If Rudy got diagnosed, we just played them, they're going to shut us down. And, sure enough they did, but, it was just crazy, because it all happened so fast. It really all happened so fast. Like, Rudy got diagnosed, they canceled the rest of the NBA games, and then they suspended the season, like, all in one swoop of a night. And, for us, it was insane, because that's literally our plans for until they're not, this is what we do. That's our job. And so, we didn't know whether, we still have no idea whether the season's coming back. We have no idea if we're going to finish. We have no idea if there's going to be a playoffs. We have no idea about, we truly know just as much as the general public.
Larry, have you, when this is going on and you're kind of trying to figure out what exactly is going to happen next, I mean, this is going to just be seem like it's going to be an ongoing thing, but if you do you have you guys gotten like any indication on and if there's a plan, what the plan would be for the season resume? Do you have any kind of, considering you are someone who could who could theoretically be more affected by this than the average player, is do you have like an opinion on how this should proceed and if and how the season should resume?
Not necessarily. I mean, I can't even right now. I don't. I mean, I feel like it's fair to say this. I don't like. I have zero interest in anything basketball related right now. It's nobody should be. You know, that's not where we're at right now. You know, I would like to see. I don't even know what I would have to see to get this, to go back to want to playing, but I do know we're very far from it. You know, obviously, you know, being one of the people that, it would be more affected by this. Like I'm not going back anytime soon. I think the league is pretty certain we're not going back anytime soon. And so, I haven't even really thought about basketball. You know, that's just not not even on my mind right now.
I saw when LeBron was talking with Channing and RJ and Allie that he said he's not going to be high-fiving his teammates anymore. Are you going to be following in the same path as him? Like, are you done just, you know, risking any chances like this, especially for somebody who could have the possibility of being at risk like you?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on how we come back with it. I mean, I don't know, you know, if in a few months or a few weeks or, you know, whatever the timeline is, if we're back and everybody's fine, nobody has it, and this thing has been completely, you know, completely banished, then yeah, what, you just resume as normal. But again, it's at this point, that's such a hypothetical situation. Like I have no idea. So yeah, if we started again right now, I wouldn't be touching or guarding anybody.
That's fair. But we also, you have a foundation as well, called Athletes versus Crohn's, and you work with a lot of kids who have Crohn's disease like yourself and other forms of IBS. And what have you done with your foundation just to work with the kids that you work with directly just during all this? Because I imagine it's just as chaotic and scary for them as it is for you.
Right. And so, just came out with is we had a virtual sit down with the head of Mount Sinai in New York, their gastroenterology department, which covers all IBD, Crohn's, colitis, and all that stuff, Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question, because there was just major news that just came out about how Crohn's patients and people on these drugs are dealing with the coronavirus so I originally thought it was like the medications that I'm on, you know, suppress my immune system to the point where, you know, I'm gonna get this thing and it's gonna be really bad. But now recent studies have shown that, you know, throughout the entire world, there's only been 40 cases of people that are on these drugs, these medications, getting the coronavirus. And so now it's kind of thought of that, you know, they're doing more studies and everything, but now it's thought of that the medications I'm on may be helping. Mm. And so, yeah, it's nice. I mean, little script flip on that one, but you know, it's just kind of, obviously it's nothing proven yet, but, we're just trying to keep everybody updated on what we find out and trying to let everybody know exactly what we know the moment we know it, and just try to keep people from panicking and doing really all we can to make sure people, you know, obviously you still follow the same guidelines that everybody else is under, but, you know, just
take extra precautions.
There's no need to panic anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
Larry, if people want to help, is there anything people that are listening can do if they want to help out your foundation or do something to raise awareness for that? Is there anything that people can do while they're at home and self-quarantined at the moment?
So right now, I mean, we have a, you know, we have our, you know, athletesfirstcrohn's.org website where, you know, you can donate and look and see all the different kind of good stuff, you know, good stuff we got going on, mentoring programs, experiences, scholarships, you know, just we a lot of good stuff going on with the foundation. But, you know, right now it's, yeah, I think right now we're all kind of fighting a bigger enemy than Crohn's disease right now. So, I mean, if I had some money to donate, I'd kind of be giving it to, you know, helping fight the coronavirus, helping treat these people that need it. And, we'll get back to our thing when all this slows down.
Larry, last kind of more serious question, and we want to talk about some just more fun stuff because I think everyone needs a little levity in this time.
I agree.
It's crazy. It's just crazy. Everywhere's everything's just absolutely so morbid. And people like turn on the DeWine thing on Facebook, and that's like a daily event thing now. And that's just like the most absurd thing to me. It's crazy. But when you're looking at the team and just how does something like this, where you guys are separated, and like Colin's back in Atlanta. You guys are kind of have to kind of do their own thing right now. You have guys, you know, that are from or that originally from overseas and aren't with their family right now. How do you guys actually just maintain trying to stay together, keep your kind of sense of community and keep bonding and figuring things out, even though you're, you know, not practicing, not traveling together anymore right now?
Right. So what we've been doing actually is obviously if you're, just like any team is, you're closer with some people as you are with others. And me, Kevin, Tristan, you know, some other guys have just been, you know, FaceTiming and cracking jokes like we normally would be, just like the season's going on. But, I've been playing video games with Jetty and Ante. You just text back and forth, different people, see what they're up to, see if they're all right. Checked in with Big Z after I heard about the earthquake in Croatia, and everybody's doing well. So, but what we've been doing is, it's called Zoom, and like these group video chats, and with our whole coaching staff and all the players, and just kind of getting on and not really even doing anything, just laughing, joking, and talking about this whole thing, like, you know, just almost, you know, just trying to bring a sense of normalcy to this all, because, you know, there you're placed in a locker room in there, and they just kind of say, hey, these are your closest friends for the next 9 months, and, you know, so right now we just, you know, you don't get to see anybody, and they are our closest friends, and so, you know, we're just trying to stay in contact and trying to make sure each other don't go crazy.
Is there anyone that you would guess is going the most stir crazy without the ability to play basketball all the time? I have a guess, but I'm curious if there's anyone that pops up to you.
Yeah, my guess would be Colin.
That was my guess. Yep.
Yeah, my guess would be Colin. I mean, that kid sleeps, eats, and drinks basketball. So, I guarantee you, he's back in Atlanta. I bet you he's found some hazmat suit to work out in or something. Like he. I bet you this is driving him up the wall.
That checks out from whatever. I know he was on the Chris Haynes podcast talking about how he didn't have access to a gym, and you could it's the only time you could hear him just going a little crazy, and it was just like, yeah, this checks out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that kid is he's a gym rat for sure.
Larry, question for you though. When you say you play video games and stuff, who would you say is the best gamer out of everyone in the locker room?
Probably Dylan, because he takes it the most serious. I mean, the most of us play video games like, you know, more of like a social thing. You get on, you talk some trash with your buddies and all that, and you get off. You know, Dylan like thinks he's good enough to make money on gaming and stuff like that. So, he just takes it like really, really serious. So he's probably the best, but like at the same time, all of us are kind of like, I don't really know if I want to play with Dylan because he's just gonna, you know, he's trying to, you know, he just wants to be a man, so he's gonna run off by himself and go do his own thing. Meanwhile, the rest of us are kind of enjoying like being bad, laughing at us being bad.
Does he actually get like mad at you guys if you're dragging him down when he's trying to win then?
Yeah, I mean he definitely expects you to play to like a certain standard, and it's just like, dude, I don't care that much. Like if I'm having fun, that's really all I care about at this point. And he's like, why have 11 killed? Where are you at? Like, what? I'm in a bush.
I mean, he's had the advantage of, unfortunately, not being able to play this year. So, I mean, a little extra practice time. You know, you have some more matters you're obviously taking care of day to day. He's got a little extra time on his hands.
Yeah, that's certainly true. That's certainly true.
To talk about another kind of thing I know you're into, what is your soccer fan origin story? How did you become a soccer fan? And I mean, tweeting about Chelsea all the time. And the one game I was covering, I distinctly remember having a Jazzy Zardes jersey on. I was just like, I've never seen an NBA player in MLS jersey. So what is the soccer fan origin story for you?
So for me, it was I grew up playing soccer even before I started playing basketball.
Okay.
And, you know, my friends played it, so therefore I played it. And, you know, I love the game. And you know, especially once I got, it was the kind of the 2010 World Cup in South Africa that really just kind of pushed me over the edge into like, okay, this is the greatest sport to ever be invented. And, so now I'm just full head in, and I you know, now I'm sitting in front of my laptop playing this, it's called Football Manager, where you're the manager of a team.
Yes.
And now I'm in year 2025, and you know, I'm managing, you know, Bournemouth, you know, the AFC Bournemouth Cherries, and you know, it's just, you know, I've gone way too far off the deep end, but it's just something that I love.
How did you decide that Football Manager is going to be one of the things you're spending just time on right now? Because it is one of those games, having played it myself far too much, it takes you down a rabbit hole. And it's one of those things that, at least for me, I found myself thinking about far too much, because it's like you just feel like it's the coolest thing in the world, even though it's like not like an overly visually like complex game or anything like that. So how did you end up being like, Football Manager, this is what I'm going to spend a bunch of time on?
So I originally started with the app. I didn't even know it was a computer game. Like, it was, I had no idea. One of my buddies told me about an app called Football Manager, and like, hey, you can like simulate games and you know, transfer players out and transfer players in. I was like, all right, I'm in. And you know, from there, went to the iPad version, and then over this break I downloaded the computer version, and it is, when I tell you, like, if I'm awake, that computer's in front of my face. I'm fully addicted to it. It's bad. It's bad. It's the best game ever. But it's just great, because especially at a time like this where there's nothing productive to be done.
Yeah.
And so I can sit in there and be as non-productive as I want.
Who's a player that's, I mean, you're a Chelsea fan and there's Pulisic and everything going on there, but are there any other players in the world, whether it's with Chelsea or anywhere else, that you're just like, that's a guy that I love, I would love to see him in person or anything like that as far as soccer players go?
So my favorite soccer player ever is Samuel Eto'o. You know, he retired. Yes. He's now retired, but he played for Chelsea, he played for Cameroon in the World Cup, and he's just like, the man. That's really who made me fall in love with the sport. If there's one that I don't know. I've gotten to meet Eden Hazard. He was my favorite when he was at Chelsea. I love Thibaut Courtois, the keeper for Chelsea. Now they're both at Madrid. My favorite currently, I've met Kevin De Bruyne, so.
Oh, amazing.
Man, I don't know. I really, That's a good question. I would like to, that's the one I have to think about.
The best Kevin De Bruyne fact I've ever heard was that the director of Parasite, Bong Joon-ho, said if he could have dinner with four people, it was like, I think like Lincoln, some South Korean politician, and Kevin De Bruyne were like his four people, with just like three people from history that he wanted to have dinner with, because Kevin De Bruyne is a lord. He's amazing.
I did see that. De Bruyne is like, he's just, to me, he's like, head this year especially, he's head and shoulders the best player in the Premier League.
When you went over there, because the fan experience like over there is so different, because like you can't drink in the stands, like it's just like a whole different feel. Like you can't like intermix fan bases because they're worried about fighting and stuff like that. Do you have, just when you went over there and did all this stuff, did you have a feel for like if you would kind of, if you preferred how that is set up versus how it is in the US?
I don't know. I really, obviously, look, I love how ours is set up, because that's the one I play in. Like, that's what I'm, you know, that's what I'm really, you know, that's what I know. And so, you know, that's great. But at the same time, like that, there's something to be said about the way those fans are over there. They're rabid. I mean, it is to me, that's why I love to go over there, just because it's so true fandom. Like when their teams win or lose, it is the end of the world, or, you know, you just made their week. And so, you know, they're cheering for their team like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, and then, you know, for me, like my one of my favorite things to do is I like to walk to the games and see everybody in the streets and you know, go cheer on whatever team I'm cheering on. And then after the game, they all have their little pubs that they go to and, you know, drink and talk about the game and just kind of carry on with their traditions. And I just like to just insert myself in their traditions and just kind of live that out while I'm over there. And it's, to me, it's just the coolest environment, because it's just, you can tell it's just this tradition that's like just so old. And it's so set in stone, and these people just love their football, and you know. So, while I love our sport and the way our fans interact with us, I go over to England every year for the atmosphere over there. So I would say that's a little bit more my favorite.
Any other Cavs players into soccer? Is there anyone else in the locker room that is like an interest of theirs? Maybe not to the level of yours, but is there anyone else that like cares about soccer?
Not really anymore. I mean, John Henson cared. I could talk soccer with John Henson. He was good to talk to. But other than that, no, it's just me.
And last thing on that, how do you manage, because the games are so early? Like I woke up to watch Tottenham, my team, which is they're very infuriating.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
look, at least it's not United. That's my take here. It's not United. It's not Liverpool. And they're bad.
That's fair.
Kane doesn't have working legs anymore. I have no hope.
Hey, Harry Kane's about to leave.
Don't do that to me. I already have Mourinho. I have Eric Dyer's corpse. It's not looking good for me in Spurs. At least they're not going to get relegated. That's all I can hope for. But
that's true.
How do you manage like being an NBA player, playing until 11 at night, talking to us annoying people in the locker room, and then watching him? Like, are you getting up at the break of dawn to watch Chelsea, or are you like, I'm going to just queue this up later once I've actually got the rest that I need?
No, I'm getting up at the break of dawn.
You're dedicated.
Respect.
Yeah, no, I'm up. I'm up every Saturday and Sunday, you know, just, I have to, like, I got to see how my boys do, my Chelsea Blues. And so, yeah, I have to, I've got to get up and watch. Yeah, if it was possible, like if they staggered the games to where, like, you know, they lasted all day, I would be up all day watching them. But since there's only like two or three time slots each weekend, you know, I just sit there for that entire time slot and, you know, check out as many games as I can.
Clearly, I'm not as big a soccer guy. That's why I was silent for almost that entire segment.
I'm just a nerd, Evan. This is. This is peak. This is, I get to ask questions that player I can talk to. Like, do you know about Harry Kane? Do you know about why Jose Mourinho is the most infuriating manager in the world? Like, come on.
I do know why Jose Mourinho is.
Exactly.
He was with us for a little bit ago.
Yeah. Amazing.
I mean, I guess the only thing I know is DeAndre Yedlin went to school with me when I was at Akron. So that's my familiarity with soccer, and the Zips were pretty good when I went to school. But let's talk about American football. The NFL is still planning on having the draft, and the Browns are picking 10th. Who do you think the Browns should be targeting? An offensive lineman, or do you have another outside-of-the-box kind of pick?
No, we need an offensive lineman. We gotta keep Baker off his back. You know, we got to protect him at all costs. And, you know, he's got all the toys, got all the weapons he could possibly want. And, you know, I'm really excited to see him this year. You know, I think obviously I was irrationally optimistic about last year. I think I'm going to be irrationally optimistic about this year as well. But, you know, I think we need an offensive lineman.
I actually, it's funny you mentioned you being optimistic about last year. I distinctly remember Colin giving you a hard time about being a Browns fan. And then, like, someone you brought up, he's a Falcons fan. He shut up right away. Do you think this year that Colin's going to be giving you as much crap about the Browns, or do you think he's finally going to be quiet about it?
Who, Colin?
Yeah.
Well, Colin, he's going to talk. He's just going to talk just because he likes to talk. we beat the Falcons. What was it? 2 years ago? I think it was his rookie year we beat the Falcons. And, you know, he, of course, I went to him right away and just started like, started talking about trash, and, you know, he still had something to say. So, you know, he's one of those guys you just gotta tune him out, because he's gonna talk regardless.
Larry, last thing here, for me at least, and if there's anything else, we'll wrap it up there. But just as a one actual basketball question, just because people will be like, why didn't you ask about this, and this? Just going to ask, when JB is rolling out the three big lineups,
you were going to ask about this.
Okay, good.
Are you a small forward?
Are you a three, Larry? Like, are you a three now?
So it's weird. Like, the way we run it kind of is, defensively, me and Tristan, or if, you know, just depends on if Andre's in, we switch it up a little bit. But if it's the traditional me, Tristan, Kevin, I am on the perimeter defensively, almost permanently. You know, we don't necessarily want Kevin out there guarding guards, and you know, we'd prefer Tristan at the rim, you know, protecting the basket. And so for me, I chase around Duncan Robinson. I guard DeRozan in the pick and roll, and then, you know, that's defensively, it works really well, because with me and Tristan's activity, it can make up for a lot of our shortcomings on that end. But offensively is where it gets a little bit creative. You know, obviously I'm not a traditional floor spacer, so we kind of have Kevin play that role, and then I play the role I'm the four, kind of post up inside out four man, and then obviously Tristan's the center. But like, mainly what we do is, if me, Kevin, or Tristan are in the game, there's going to be a smaller player on one of us, so we pretty much just post up whoever's on us. If it's me, I post up. If it's Kevin, he posts up. If, you know, then it's not going to be Tristan. But, you know, we pretty much just try to take the game back old school, you know, beat them with twos rather than chucking threes.
I get that. Is it just something JB's always like, how quickly did JB introduce this to you guys when he became head coach? Or was it something like you guys were on board with right away? Or did you kind of think, like, okay, this is a little weird, but then once you saw an execution, you saw like how it actually would work?
Well, it was something that as soon as we got Andre, we knew something had to happen, you know, because we, you know, I don't think I'd be, you know, revealing any secrets to say that our front court is probably is the powerhouse of our team, right? That's if we're gonna be doing well, the front court has to be pretty dominant. Mm-hmm. And you know, between me, Tristan, Kevin, and Andre, there was just not enough minutes as there just wasn't enough minutes. All of us should be playing around. We should be playing 26, 27 plus minutes, all four of us. And so we had to figure out a way to do that. And, you know, JB kind of thought like, you know, hey, you know, Larry, you can guard these guys on the perimeter. What do you think? You know, you think you want to try some three? So sure. We ran a little bit of practice and got kind of comfortable with it. But once we got hit with the injury bug, it kind of forced us that way. You know, KP got a concussion. Darius went down. Dante twisted his ankle. We had no other choice really. And so, you know, that Miami game and even the games leading up and after that are just, it wasn't something that we were like, oh, this is the lineup that we're going to finish with. This is a great lineup. It just kind of happened that way. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have as many guys that understand basketball and you know, kind of like unselfishly care about winning as that lineup does, you know, I think me, Kevin, and Tristan have a really good understanding of what that takes. And I think it was a really good way to shock the other teams into like, you know, what the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there... I mean, in Miami, they didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what we were doing. And so that's why it worked, I think.
Hey, it's only weird if it doesn't work, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Larry, last thing, has there just been any difference kind of notably between the transition from John, which certainly, you know, unexpected and kind of unprecedented in a lot of ways, to JB? Has there just been one thing that has been most notable with JB in charge of the team now?
Most notable. I think the biggest thing would just kind of have to be the atmosphere around the team is probably just a little bit more I don't want to say relaxed, because relaxed is a bad word, but everybody was kind of, you know, everybody's a little bit less off edge. You know, and again, like less of, I don't want to use serious because that's not a good word, but like, you know, of course we take it serious. Of course we, you know, make sure everybody's paying attention, but it's a little bit less serious and a little bit less life and death. Right now. And so, you know, I think we're all really thriving on that. You know, I know, KP and, you know, myself and a lot of guys have really, you know, really found a rhythm now. And so, you know, it just kind of sucks that the season got called when it did, because, you know, I think we're really about to start to really find a groove.
Yeah. Is the KP like, I swear this is the last one. Is KP being as good as he is already? Did that surprise you? Because I think he's just kind of he's been the rookie revelation of the year in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. And no, it didn't surprise me that he was that good. You know, because obviously, you know, we being in the NBA, you know, we hear about you know, oh, KP, this kid's at the beginning of last year. Oh, this kid's going to be a top five pick and. All this stuff, and then to see him drop to 30, it was like, well, you know, your talent level, you can't change that much in talent level in 1 year. So we knew he was going to be, you know, talented, but, you know, what everybody was concerned with was like, all right, you know, level of professionalism and all that stuff. And to me, his talent level didn't shock me, but him coming in and being such a good dude, like with a good kid with a good heart, like he's a good person. And like, that's one of those things that like you don't really know until you spend time around him. And, you know, all we did was just hear, you're like, okay, this kid's kind of a headache. But, you know, the fact that he's came in and gone about his work the way he has and showed us all that, you know, they were wrong about me and they're going to regret it. So, I'm thrilled for him. He's had a heck of a year, and yeah, he's gonna be something else in the near future.
Larry, thank you so much for the time. We really, really appreciate it, and you know, hopefully, we'll eventually, when things settle down, we'll get to link up in person and everything, but I appreciate the time and hope you and the whole family kind of stay safe and healthy right now.
Yeah, for sure. Much appreciated, guys.